Okay, you just heard me say that I have a friend. When I was back in the kind of the church culture, I was moving up rapidly within the ranks of the charismatic fundamentalism movement, and did a lot of deliverance ministry, did a lot of teaching, did a lot of traveling, and I was introduced to this man, and as I said, most of you would recognize his name if I said it out loud. A really neat guy. A mentor to my mentor. And just loved him. Written many books. And when I started to have my... I didn't tell you this yesterday, but I... Who was I talking to today? I was talking to she's not Leah. Here.
Leah?
Yeah. She was telling me about kind of a breakdown that she had. And I had the same experience back in 1999. I had a type of a spiritual breakdown. Am I talking loud enough? And the spiritual breakdown consisted of one day I was talking to a friend of mine who's quite religious, and she was talking about a friend in common that was at the hospital with their relative who had suffered a heart attack or a stroke or something, was quite ill. And she said to me, well, do you think they're saved? I mean, do you think he's saved? And I had something happened to me where I didn't know what that word meant. It was almost like I had a little bit of a breakdown. I mean, my pulse quickened. I felt myself flush because I felt real. Has anyone ever felt that you get kind of discombobulated and you don't? It was almost you hear people having strokes and things, and I was like, oh my God! But the only thing I lost was my Christian words, my Christianese, and so I was thinking, oh my God, what's happening to me? And if you remember back in the 90s when computers first came out, when you would lose Word, when your hard drive would crash, you would go back to a DOS prompt. Does anyone remember that? That little flashing said DOS and then I think a number or a letter. And you lost your whole, you know, like Word program. And that's what happened to me. It was sudden and it was dramatic, where I lost my Christian vocabulary, some of it. And so I looked at her, and I must have had a kind of a funny look in my face, because I was, you know, she said, do you think they're saved? And I was like, and I said, am I saved? And she said, what? And I said, are you saved? She said, what are you talking about? And I said, I don't know what that means. She goes, saved? I said, I mean, because I had many altar calls and won many people to Jesus and, you know, the whole thing. And I looked down at my hand and I pulled up on my little age spots and my little ring, and I said, is this saved? And she said, I don't know what's wrong with you. And I said, I don't know what that means. And she said, well, it's when you go to heaven, when you die. And all I could say was, no, that's not what it means. That is not what it means. And I started to shift in my understanding then. Something apprehended me. And I was, as you heard me talk yesterday, I exited the institution. I could no longer attend. Who was telling me about praise music, worship music last night? That you can't listen to it anymore. Who was saying that? Oh, you know what? It was a lady with the dark hair. That's not here anymore. Yeah, they were sitting back there.
Oh, Lima.
Yeah. She said there was even a time where she couldn't listen to the music anymore. And what it does is it pulls you back into a culture that is familiar to you. But I exited the system. I exited the language. I exited the understanding. And so this friend that I was telling you about that was quite well known, I started to share with him some of my thinking about heaven and hell. And we had had several phone conversations, and the last phone conversation that we had, he said these words to me. He said, if what you're saying is true, then my whole life's work has been in vain. everything that I've written is no good if what you say is true. And that was our last phone conversation. And he wasn't wrong. He stayed with what he knew to be true. And that was a good thing. That was his choice, it was his plan, it was the path that he had charted and navigated, and that's where he stayed. And that was okay. It was a good thing. So today, you know, I'm not going to say that I'm right in the things that I say. I think that would be just as bad as those that try to proselytize us. What was it that Jesus said? You travel the seas in order to win one proselyte, and you make them twice as much a son of hell as yourself. I'm not here to convince anybody of anything. I'm just sharing my journey, and each one of you have a different perspective, and that perspective is not wrong. It's just your perspective. What I will say, however, is that the people that I am most drawn to are the ones that are pioneers, that are navigating out from old structures. And in order to do that, first of all, there has to be a drawing and a desire, and each of you have that, otherwise you wouldn't be here. And then there has to be a willingness to, when I said that I had to leave Jesus behind yesterday, or let Jesus go, there has to be a willingness just to perceive outside of our dogma. And I say it's dogma, unquestioned belief, because many of us, without knowing it, have been brainwashed. I know I was. And brainwashing takes place through repetition, through things that we submit ourselves to. In our Christian structures, there's been many opportunities for brainwashing, and many opportunities. I was talking to Daryl this morning about behavioral modification techniques that we do to one another by acceptance and rejection.
Well-meaning, you know.
Absolutely. Very well-meaning. Sort of like someone questioning Daryl about his earring. You know, let him know that that's not... And, you know, I did this to my kids. I mean, my kids... My son Christian got a tattoo at age 17, and I found it on the computer. He took, for some reason, took a picture of it on my computer. I guess he didn't think I would see it. And it was a cross. I mean, he did all these religious things, I think, because he thought maybe I would be more accepting if he had more religious things on him. But I remember he had his tongue pierced and his ears pierced while we were out of town, and I just said, it's okay, you know, you'll be 18. Or he said, well, I'm going to move out, Mom, so you don't have to worry about that. And I said, well, when are you moving out? He said, on Friday. And I said, okay, well, you can take him out until Friday. And of course, I know that they close up right away. But I was pretty rigid back in the day, and it's just the way I was. But anyway, I want to tell you a story about Chris, and we can launch off our session today. Last night I spoke to you about the accident that he was in, where he lost his left arm and his left leg. Most of you were in here when we were talking about that. And it was quite a traumatic experience. He ended up, you know, he died, was resurrected on the scene by my husband, brought to the hospital, and where they put him back together again. But what I didn't tell you is, you know, remember when I said that we choose these things? And at some level of our consciousness, we're aware? Because I know that I had, I cried from, Lord, about 8 months prior to the accident. I just would have these periods of dread. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? And all I could do was cry. And I tell you that I could have filled up a bathtub maybe a couple of inches deep with the tears that came out of my body. It was unnatural. And my husband Lyle had a series of three visions / dreams where he woke up in the middle of the night, sat straight up in bed with a cold sweat and with Chris missing limbs. And he didn't wake me up the first time, but the second time he woke me up and he said, Barbara, it's the most disturbing thing. I see Chris without any limbs. And I just said, well, you know, what do you think that is? And we decided that maybe it was some stuff left over from when he was over in Iraq. He was one of the first in to Baghdad. And so I said, maybe it's just, you know, those leftover fear or something. And then it happened again, where he woke up and saw him without limbs. And each time it was different limbs. Sometimes it was no limbs. But it was very disturbing to him. So when I received the phone call that they had wrecked their bikes, that Chris had wrecked his bike and impacted this truck, Lyle was very calm on the phone and said, well, Chris put his bike down and he's going to need some surgery on his leg. And, you know, deep down inside of me, when I talked to his fiance, I told her, I said, you need to prepare yourself because there's really only one thing that Lyle would lie to me about and be good at it, because I had an hour and a half drive to get to the hospital. And so I knew. And so when I got to the hospital, long, long story short, but he was already halfway there when he called me, and I was way back at home, but somehow we arrived at the hospital at the very same time. No way that should have happened. And the nursing staff at the trauma center, how many of you know Dr. Red Duke? Does anyone ever hear about him? He's a pioneer in trauma medicine. Okay. But the nursing staff did not know that I was unaware of his condition. Lyle did not tell me, and they were bringing me back to see him before surgery when Lyle intercepted me and said, Barbara. And I turned and I said, oh, yeah, hi. I was just going back to see Chris. And he looked at me, and I knew that something was wrong, and his knees buckled. And I thought, oh, and he said, and he literally caught himself on the counter as he was, his knees were giving out, and he said, I didn't tell you everything. And I said, what? And he said, his arm came off at the wreck. And, you know, a mother would say, oh my God, or, you know, whatever. But you know what I said to him? The first words out of my mouth were, baby, your visions, your dreams. It pulled me back to the time when he told me about that, and so things started to click, you know, even then. But so, you know, as the story goes, he recovered incredibly well. We had a lot of very interesting experiences, including a visitation. When the Spirit spoke to me about him choosing this and this being a part of his path, I also had another word, and this word was you need to bridge the gap, that there's a gap in the way that people perceive spiritual things. And he said, I want you to bridge that gap. And in order to bridge the gap between earth and heaven, there's an expanse up here that's a vibrational boundary between this age and the next age. Am I making sense? A dimensional boundary. We function with our five senses at a certain vibrational level. And there's a barrier, a boundary between here and here. But in the scripture, it says that as we take the promised land, that he will expand our boundaries. Doesn't he say that? And broaden our feet beneath us. So I was taken to a place that was up here, somewhere. And I was shown some mysteries and things that I didn't really understand. But he told me that my task was to bridge the gap. That was my task in life, was to bridge the gap between the natural age and the supernatural age, or the world to come.
Well, can I say something real quick?
Sure.
You remember when Joshua took the land and they rested, and then the angel said, it's time to get back out there and fight some more and take, you remember, and they couldn't, because I see it as a picture of you're not going to take it in that way, in the old-fashioned getting out there in the flesh. And so they couldn't, well, they just whooped the world, and so they could in that sense, but it was like that season was over, the fleshly working. Now it's all going to be in another consciousness that you're going to take away. So.
And the symbolism of that, Daryl, is they had to be circumcised in front of their enemies.
Wow.
You talk about vulnerability. In front of their enemies, they had to be circumcised. And that's a symbol of having your carnal, fleshly, ego nature cut off. so that you begin to perceive God from a whole different vantage point, not in the natural, but in the supernatural. So this gap is what needed to be bridged. And so he told me that, and I said, I don't know how to do that. You know, here's my son less than 24 hours after the wreck, and this angel or spirit or God, whatever it is you want to say, is talking to me, telling me to bridge the gap. And I'm saying, I will, tell me how. I will, tell me how. You know, having watch in his room when he was still unconscious and just walking back and forth around the bed, and I'm hearing, bridge the gap, bridge the gap. I'm thinking, am I crazy? Am I a mother that's in grief, that sees the hope of the supernatural dimension so this child can have his legs and his arm back? I mean, I'm thinking all these goofy things. But so I tried to rest in that knowledge, and I said, if you will tell me how, I will do whatever it takes to bridge the gap. I will do whatever it takes to bridge the gap. Just tell me how to do it. And so the next morning was shift change at Herman Memorial Hospital, and there is a corridor between campuses, and it's long. It's like 2 football fields long. How many of you have heard me tell this part of the story? You have? This is such a cool story. But I'm walking, and it's 8 o'clock, shift change, and all I see is a sea of scrubs. The blues and the greens and some, you know, maroon colors, but it's all people walking with stethoscopes, and I'm in the midst of them, and again, 2 football fields long that connects 2 huge towers in downtown Houston at the medical center. And way down there, it had to be 450 feet, was this very tall man. I had to be 6'8", 6'10", head and shoulders over everybody else. Hard not to miss him. And he had this mopping head of hair, just huge hair. And as he walked, he had a real funny gait. You know, he would be walking, and I could see him every now and then, you know, through the parting of the people, and he just was walking along like this and like this. And that mopping head of hair was going back and forth. So I'd keep walking and look down and look around me, and I'd look up again, and now he's closer by 100 feet, and he's walking again with this big tall guy and his hair going to and fro. And I'm looking down and I'm walking around again, and now he's much closer to me, and I can see that through the seas of people that part that he has on a shirt with big letters. Anyone know what it says? It says GAP. And I looked and I got the just, you know, the chills. But then right away I said, there's got to be 250,000 of those shirts in Houston. It's not that big of a coincidence, but I get you. Gap. Bridge the gap. Okay, I get it. And so I'm walking along, and I'm still looking at him and thinking, you know, just what a goofy gait he had. He was just in the way that he walked and moved. And as he got closer, I could see, just like I'm looking at you, you know that I'm making eye contact with you, right? You know, I'm not looking at your nose, I'm looking at your eyes. And you know when someone is looking at your eyes, even from a great distance. And so I'm looking up and I'm seeing this gap and this, and he's looking right at me. So now I'm self-conscious. Okay. You know, and as he gets closer, he's still looking at me. And he's still, and I mean, I am swollen up. I've got no makeup on. I know that I'm probably just a wreck, sleeping in my clothes, and yet he's coming closer and closer, and he's looking at me like you're looking at me. And now he is about, if I was standing over here from you, that's how far he was. And I looked, and his shirt had 2 more words written on it. Bridge the gap. And I fell to the floor. Because I looked at him, and I looked at his shirt, and I looked at him, and he looked at me like, oh yeah. I'm a messenger. So he's walking by me, and he's going, and I'm looking at him, and we're looking at each other like this, and he's walking by, and his neck is turned, and my neck is turned, and I thought, oh my God, that was a messenger. So all of this time, I received a lot of encouragement, even with Chris's condition. knowing that all things happen for a reason, and that in our lives, this family has incarnated to do something miraculous, to bridge the gap between this age and the next. When Jesus was here, he patterned the way to see the manifestation of the kingdom, where the physical properties of this dimension did not hold him back. Withered limb, come out. You know what I mean? He was able to do these things, but when he left for us a pattern, and that seed of Christ that's within us needs to grow up into a mature place of understanding and execution. So I've never done this, but I'm going to show you this. You know, the Spirit gives us really interesting keys to let us know that all things work together for the good, that this was not unknown by all that is, including all that is in here. Lyle had glimpses of that. It was in his consciousness somewhere that this was going to be happening. So before Chris left for Iraq, he went and said, Mom, he came up to where I was working. He said, I don't want you to worry about me. Pulled off his shirt and shows me this angel that fills his back with a sword. And he had tattooed on there, you only live once. You only live once. I think that's what it is. And he's got the fire and the dove on one side and the water and the dove on the other side, which is being baptized of water and of fire, or flesh and the spirit. So many interesting things. But he said, so he showed me the angel. He said, you don't have to worry about me over there because an angel's got my back. And I said, okay, darling. So he comes back now, and then he has his wreck. And then he's healed up and using a prosthetic, and it's 2 years after he had the wreck, and 3 years after he had, 4 years after he had gotten the tattoo. And he said, he came over and he said, Mom, you're not going to believe this. And he pulls off his shirt and goes, look at my angel. And I looked at his angel and I said, yeah. And he said, look at it, Mom, really look at it. I said, okay, it looks like the angel that was on your back. And he said, no, Mom, what is it missing? And I said, I don't know, what do you mean? And as I looked closer, I realized that the tattoo was missing a hand and a foot.
Wow.
So I want to show that to you just as a means of encouragement, that there's nothing that happens that is not seen. See, there's missing a hand coming out of that sleeve. See that? The hand is right there holding the sword. No hand over here. Here's a foot. There's no hand coming out of that part of the rope.
Was the foot in the hand there when you got the tattoo?
No.
It was never there. It was never there.
It was never there.
No, right. I wanted to.
Isn't that interesting? It's missing a left hand and a right foot.
I just felt my jumping in the chair.
Isn't that amazing, though? And even that was...
This was before he...
This was 4 years... almost 3 years before the accident. And we didn't see it until 2 years after the accident. But you can see that there's... Right here, there's no hand. And there's a hand right there with the sword, and right here, there's no foot.
So what do y'all think about that?
Is that the side hands?
No, it's different. He is missing his left side. But I thought that was a significant enough sign on there. Missing a hand and a foot. Now, can you imagine the consciousness in the tattoo artist that had to leave out those two body parts that he would later be missing? I mean, all that is in every single one of us, performing miracles and following instruction. And
did he lose his left
foot? He lost his left foot and left hand. That happens to be on the other side of his body.
But still.
Yeah.
Like you said, it's a different mirror. Never noticed.
No, just isn't that interesting?
It's not just a matter, it just still be lost.
He has
prosthetic?
He doesn't use a prosthetic arm, but he uses a prosthetic leg. It's pretty short. And there's a lot of dynamics going into using a prosthetic arm. And you know, that picture was taken for an interview with the Houston Chronicle, and we didn't even notice it then. That wasn't recent. That was right after the wreck, before he got a prosthetic leg. The Chronicle came to interview him.
And that's not...
that's something. So all things are seen, all things are known. So, you know, part of what I wanted to do today... here's another... it's kind of a gruesome thing. But tell me there's no intelligence in the womb. That baby's eye is looking right at the sonogram, right at the doctor. Can you see that? Isn't that interesting? That's my granddaughter.
Her eye.
Yeah.
Her nose.
Yeah. She's doing, she's beautiful. And she does have another eye.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what we're going to do. I'm going to pass these out. And again, the three words that I heard for you here was that I was to encourage, I was to bring clarity, and I was to show you how to move from one age to the next. We sure did have quite a download yesterday of information. I really didn't intend to do that, but sometimes when there's a flow, there's just not a lot I can do about it, except let it come. So if you want to open to your first page.
This is so nice.
Oh, thank you. We'll just go over this slowly, and I'm not going to be rigid about this. Y'all want to talk about something else, we can. We take a rabbit trail or two or three or five, that's okay with me. I just knew that the people group that I'm called to invest in, are those that are migrating from one age to the next. Not everybody does, and there's nothing wrong with that. Not everybody does, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I'm called to help those migrate that are sensing a change.
Yes.
I can remember, and I was telling Daryl this, that I had a meeting in my home where I said, I'm not satisfied. I have 40 people in my living room, and I can remember just pounding my fists on my lap and saying, this is not all there is. This can't be it. This can't be all. And I was just, I was in a place, and I call it divine dissatisfaction, where the things that you do cease to work for you anymore. Not saying that they cease to work for everybody, because certainly even miracles are still happening for missionaries that go over and travel to Africa, you know, and they raise the dead and all these things. Miracles still happen, but for whatever reason, they weren't happening for me. And I knew that it was time to migrate. I knew that it was time in consciousness. I was being brought to a different place. So those are the people that I'm called to. So I want to, more than anything else, to bring encouragement to you that there's a purpose in our wandering. It's not for nothing. That the things that we go through and the experiences that we go through are beautiful. And they will bring us to the place. You know, the scripture says, do I, you know, cause you to be in labor and not bring you to birth?
That's true.
Yes. There is birth ahead. So let's look to our first page here. You heard me talk yesterday about all things and circumstances serve you. All things. And when I talk about this, I can look around the room and I can see people's trauma and stuff. And they're faced with the reality of totally rejecting what I have to say or embracing it and moving into a place of forgiveness. Forgiveness is so much better. Now, I want to tell you about an ability that you all have. And I want to tell you about this ability through the parable of the unjust steward. Does anyone know that parable? Makes absolutely no sense. Parable of the unjust steward says that there is a man who runs a business. And the owner of the business, the master, comes and says, I've heard a rumor. You are squandering my wealth. You will not be in this position much longer. And he leaves. And the steward thinks, holy crap, I need to make some changes. I need to do something quick. And so what he does is he goes to people that owe his master money or goods. How much do you owe my master for? Well, for 80 gallons of oil. He says, okay, make it 40. Goes to another guy and says, how much do you owe my master for? And he says, I owe him for 50 bushels of grain. Okay, make it 20. How much do you owe my master for? And so on and so forth. And he begins to pare down what everybody owes his master. So then the master comes back, and what does he do? He praises the steward. He says, well done. You've been wise in the ways of the world, and you've made for yourself friends and eternal dwellings. Makes no sense, does it?
It doesn't make sense.
So here we see that the steward is reducing debt. Forgive us our debts as we forgive those who have debt. So the master and the steward are in the same body. It's the spirit and the ego or the soul. And the master is saying, you're squandering my wealth. And the wealth that is inside of you is the ability to forgive debt. And once you forgive debt, you make for yourself a place where? In eternal dwellings. Where is the ego going? There is a place for that level of consciousness, the one that can choose willfully to forgive debt. It is a wealth, it is something you all have. And so when I talk to you about embracing your life's path, that nothing happens to you, it happens for you. You're not a victim, you're a participant. Once you embrace that, once you understand that, you begin to awaken. That everything has been planned by you, for you, that everything serves you. And when you enter into that level of consciousness, you begin to think like a non-human. You begin to think in a higher order, from another dimensional level. When you see everything that is external as being planned out for you and really only mirrors your own internal functions and processes, you are no longer thinking like a third dimensional human. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Isn't that good?
Who can forgive sin but God?
Right. So forgiveness is a wealth that is being squandered, and the ego will not be in that position if he continues to squander the wealth. In other words, he'll go around the mountain again. He'll come back and incarnate and learn and go and learn. And when you die, you go to this place of knowing and understanding. And you're like, oh, how come I couldn't, you know. But we have this, you know what an escrow is? An escrow account?
Yes.
You have a vibrational escrow account. As a matter of fact, when Chris went to go hear Abraham, Abraham told him that you are an incredible creative master that is incarnated with an incredible amount of vibrational escrow in your account. She says, I can see it all around you. So even though he, in his mind, he's Chris, you know, the kid that went to Iraq and screwed up and, you know, blew up his motorcycle, you know, in an accident, but someone else can see him and said, oh no. Most people that go through trauma and that are victims of trauma have planned it out and are among the most advanced because they know that time is short and they know that obedience is learned through the things that we
experience.
The Christ is brought to maturity through the things that he suffers. The third dimensional reality offers an incredible school. As a matter of fact, energies, celestial energies from all over the multiverse petition for the right to come here and become visible. That's why some of us have blue eyes and green eyes and brown skin and white skin and red skin. Your energies from all over the multiverse that petition for the right and the opportunity to become visible. And we display dimensions of all that is in our physicality. Isn't that cool? What do y'all think of that, the picture on the cover?
Yes.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yes.
I showed this picture in a fundamentalist church a few weeks ago. Up on the screen. And you know, I asked permission. I said, is this okay? Is this too racy? I mean, nothing is showing, but is it too racy? And the man that was the sound guy said, no, that's fine. That's the one I asked permission. It was the guy that did the projection and the sound. And so we put that up on the screen, and the pastor literally put his hands back and looked up and said, turn out the lights. We need to see this. But isn't that just such a beautiful picture of what is being birthed? Christ consciousness is being birthed in the earth and through the earth. And Christ consciousness comes through being subjected to the knowledge of good and evil. It's purposeful and it's beautiful. It is a purposeful immersion or baptism in mortality, in humanity, in darkness and light. Purposeful immersion into these life experiences. And all that is gaining knowledge and understanding through you. It's part of the plan. Spirit could not have these experiences without a helpmate. You are Eve, and you are Adam. You are both in one body. You all understand that? Okay. Things don't happen to you, they happen for you. You've chosen your life's path from before the foundation of the world. Can I touch on this just briefly again? When I heard in the emergency room, when I was getting hysterical, and I heard the voice, again, this wasn't learned, this was a direct experience with something extra-dimensional, an aspect of myself that knows all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things, and that spirit spoke to me and said, remember, Barbara, he chose this, and so did you. Remember, Barbara, he chose this, and so did you. And at that point, I was faced with the knowledge of, did I? Well, no. What person would choose to miss an arm and a leg? That doesn't make any sense. What mother would want that for her child? And so there's a lot of people that trip over that understanding because they say, no, I would never choose to be raped. No. Didn't do it. Not my fault. Right? But they don't understand that when they chose this, they were not human. Because the voice continued on and spoke to me and said, yes, from the foundation of the world, when you were hidden in Christ and I made known to you the mysteries. So from that place of being hidden in Christ, guess what? I'm not flesh and blood, am I? I'm not human. I don't have that soul. I don't have that carnal, egoic consciousness that says good, evil, right, wrong, love, hate. I don't have that. From that position of being hidden in Christ, all you see is purpose. Purpose, purpose. And not only purpose for you, the individual, but purpose for you as a collective man, a collective being. What is it that is lacking in the way of affliction and suffering that needs to be filled up? Why did Paul say that? You know, Paul said that. Paul said, I'm going to go on and, you know, buffet my flesh because there is a lacking of affliction and suffering that must be filled up in the body. That's a corporate man. And remember, learning obedience through the things that we suffer. Third dimensional reality, the place of duality, where the knowledge of good and evil flourishes, offers the greatest classroom for spirit to grow in flesh. Do y'all understand that? Mm-hmm. The greatest classroom and opportunity to be immersed in the knowledge of good and evil. That's what baptism symbolizes. Water, Joseph Campbell, the greatest person that understanding the myths and mythology, said that water represents dense human consciousness. So baptism then is the divine that enters into a physical form and is immersed in darkness or in dense human consciousness, forgetting the divine, forgetting your origin, forgetting who you are, totally immersed in humanity, holding its divine breath until the time of awakening where it comes up and comes out. So we practice the act, don't we? Over and the ritual. We practice it over and over and over again. And remember last night we talked about Hebrews chapter 6, leaving behind the doctrines of baptism. It's not about getting wet. There's nothing wrong with practicing baptism because it saved that in our consciousness all these millennia. But there comes a time when you leave behind the elementary doctrines and you enter into perfection. And we understand why we did these things for as long as we did them, because we can see the symbolism behind the history. Right? Isn't that cool?
Yes.
You were hidden in Christ, and the mysteries are made to you. It is not clear what we shall be. There is a gap in consciousness, a veil that separates the natural from the supernatural. You heard me talk about this last night and a little bit this morning. Our consciousness, this is important, our consciousness is couched in linear, logical awareness. But the bride's veil is about to be lifted. This is what is so difficult, because from the first time that we incarnated, and how many know that, I mean, the Bible took out, I think it was 168, in the second or the third century, took out about 168, 170 references to reincarnation. And you know why? I think the church of the day didn't want you to think you had more than one lifetime to get it right. It is appointed man once to die, and then the judgment. Of course, we go to this place of judging our life's experience and saying, now I've got to get this right. I have chosen this task. I have chosen this to overcome, not only individually, but corporately. So I'm coming back, and I'm coming back, and I'm coming back. Now, when Jesus spoke of John the Baptist, and he said, of those born of women, has arisen none greater than John the Baptist. And for those who can receive it, what did he say?
He
is Elijah. That was one reference that they missed. So energy is returned time and time and time again. And you know, that's one of those things that as Christians we were taught, no, don't go there. No, that's not of God. No, that's not of God. That's heretical. That's this or that's that. Give yourself some permission to think outside the box and just ask. Ask, you know, the spirit that resides in you to teach you all things, to teach you the ways that are true and right and good and pure and lovely, and to begin to shed some of those things that don't serve you anymore. And faithfully, it does. It teaches you. Okay. So the bride's veil is about to be lifted. Currently, we're couched in linear logical awareness. That's the masculine energy, Linda, that we were talking about this morning. You're about to experience a necessary shift in your conscious understanding of spiritual truth as lightning flashes from the east to the west. Remember, we talked about this last night. You want me to cover that again real quick? You know, the earth reflects us, this earth. So the eastern hemisphere of the world is mystical, is it not? And imaginative, and is so different than the West. The West really is rational, logical, linear, and I'm speaking in generalities, but the western hemisphere is like the western or left part of our brain. And the eastern hemisphere is like the right or eastern part of our brain. And so, in our, and how many of you know this, that we are dominated by masculine energy right now? Do you know that there was a time when the feminine was dominant?
Mm-hmm.
Do y'all know about that?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that the, even the temple worship of Diana and the cult of Diana and the worship of the feminine?
Well, deities.
Yes. And so, you know, all throughout our history, we experience approximately 13,000 years of masculine influence, and then it shifts, and we experience 13,000 years of feminine influence. That's why we're seeing so much homosexuality, especially in males, because feminine energy is flooding the planet. It's the way it's supposed to be. It's not that we're going to hell in a handbasket. It's just a sign of the times. That's a whole other teaching. But just suffice it to say that these are things that we shouldn't judge, and these are things we should love. There are those that are called to judge, but I'm not speaking to that sector of people. I'm talking to the ones that are overcoming this dimensional level by the cessation of judgment. Remember that? We talked about that? So when they said to Jesus, Jesus was telling about all these things happening and cataclysm in the earth. Now you can view it as cataclysm out there, or you can view it as cataclysm in here. Earthquakes, shakings, lightning, thunders, you know, all of those things are happening inside of us as we begin to shift and to shed and to be birthed. I mean, birth is traumatic. It is. And if you look at what happens when a woman's water breaks, remember, water is representative of dense human consciousness, and that's what we breathe, is dense human consciousness. But what happens? It breaks, doesn't it? And the baby in the womb goes through this restrictive, narrowing, kind of traumatic experience, and birthed into a whole different place and a whole different mode of being, breathing the ethers, the spirit, rather than the waters of human consciousness. Isn't that just such a beautiful picture? So the dragon waits at the entrance of the womb, waiting to devour the Christ in us. That's the egoic consciousness that says, "Oh, you think you're God?" Waits to devour. But what happens to this Christ consciousness?
It's forgotten.
It's caught up to the throne. And the woman that gave birth, the earth, the consciousness, retreats to the wilderness for a time and half a time, where she is nourished by perfect, beautiful. There needs to be a structure that births the Christ, needs to be the mother. So beautiful. So, okay, getting back to the lightning. If you ever watch Nova or Discovery, you know, they put, what are they called, electrodes on the human brain, and they'll stimulate the brain by asking it a question that is logical or mathematical or requires, ciphering or whatever. And the left side of the brain looks like there's a lightning storm, because the neurons and the everything is firing and it's beautiful. And then, you know, conversely, if you ask it a question that requires art or imagination or something spiritual, the eastern hemisphere of the brain begins to light up, and it's considered spiritual or feminine, masculine, feminine. And so Jesus was asked, "When will your kingdom come?" And of course, we know he says, "As lightning flashes from the east to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be in his kingdom." So the east to the west, if it originates in spirit. But right now, our logic is dominant, is it not? We think linearly. We think in
time.
Yeah, we think in time. But if we learn, and this is part of the movement of our lesson, if we learn to develop those intuitive faculties, and there's so many good ways that we can stimulate that part of our brain. How many of you have heard of Jill Bolte Taylor and her book, My Stroke of Insight?
Yep.
Get the book and read it. And she's also on TED on the internet. But she talks about, she had this huge, massive stroke, and it shut down the western hemisphere of her brain, completely shut it down. And she could not see linearly. And she tells about this experience, and she's this trained scientist. And now she knows a different way, a different mode of operation. My Stroke of Insight by Jill Bolte Taylor. You'll love it. and the things that happened to her for her to discover this intuitive place. And just as a means of encouragement, meditation, yoga, learning to practice stillness, those are all things that will begin to stimulate and help you navigate out of this, the Western Hemisphere and into the Eastern Hemisphere. And again, look at our Earth. The Earth mirrors the human brain. Eastern is spiritual, Western is logical. So as we learn to originate our thought and our being from this part of the brain, and then give instruction to the Western part, a whole different dimension is going to manifest. It is not clear what we shall be, but if we do these things, and we practice this, and exit our consciousness being couched in linear things, then you're going to see a whole different manifestation. You're going to see a whole different creature emerge. And this creature is equal parts God and man. Now, let me just have a segue here. When Esther was prepared, we know that her body was anointed, Christed, with oil. That's the symbol of Christ is the anointed ones, and the oil and the flesh become one. You can't separate oil and flesh. So she was anointed, and she went in boldly before the king and said, I have a request. And they were afraid for her. You know, her uncle was afraid for her to boldly go in because you would lose your life if you went in, just like the priest had to wear the robes and had to do all these things in order to enter into the Holy of Holies, into this place of divine communion. And so she went in boldly, and having been prepared by being Christed, having been prepared, she walks in, and you know what he says to her? Ask anything up to half of my kingdom. She's an equal partner. And what she does is she goes in and petitions for the salvation of her people, which is your task, to save the body. All such incredible patterns, 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 up to half of my kingdom. This is what he has offered. This is what the bride gets. The bride being that feminine part of the Godhead. This is what the bride gets. An equal share in the manifestation of the kingdom. That's powerful. Okay. As lightning flashes from the east to the west. Now listen to this. The choice to evolve your spiritual consciousness and awareness is yours. And now, this is also important because I'm going to give you a very important pattern in nature. In the Song of Solomon, how does the intended masculine court the feminine? Does he force his way on her?
No.
Does he say, you will submit?
No.
What does he do?
He woos her.
He woos her. And to submit to the masculine energy, like a bride to a groom, she willingly opens for him. Willingly. What is the pattern, conversely? If she is forced, what is the pattern? It's rape.
Yeah.
It's rape. So, this spirit is wooing you to submit.
That's the masculine that's asleep.
Right. Well, it gets convoluted, yeah. Because the yin and the yang, there's masculine in every feminine and feminine in every masculine. But balance is what we're after.
Yeah.
The balance is what we're after. So the choice is yours to continue on down this path. Nobody will force it upon you. It's your choice. And you will know what you have designed for your own life. If what I'm saying doesn't sit right with you,
it's okay.
It's okay. You can couch these things and let them marinate, and they may make sense, you know, on down the road. But ultimately, the choice to evolve in your consciousness is yours. And one of the key aspects of evolving in consciousness is leaving behind the literal interpretation of Scripture. Because the law never made, the letter never made anyone perfect. The letter is
powerless.
And the spirit
is light.
So the law will bring us to a certain level of understanding, but it will not bring you to perfection. And that's where we're standing at today, is we're wanting to cross over into the promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. And that place requires a journey over the River Jordan, which means death and descending. And the cool thing is when the priest put his foot on the waters piled up in a heap all the way back to the city named
Adam.
Adam. Pictures and symbolism. And so then they cross over, and then he says, the people say, you want us to do what? The enemy is right there. And all of the ites are symbolic of our egoic consciousness. So once the decision is made to evolve and to bring the egoic consciousness to a place of being a willing servant, we have to conquer these giants in our consciousness, our fear, our anger, our terror, our desire to manipulate, control, jealousy, envy, you know, everything that's lower. We're going to be faced with those enemies. But if we're circumcised and we have that fleshly carnal nature cut away, so much easier for us to take what's been promised to us. Isn't that such a great picture? I mean, all these mysteries are right in the Bible for us to understand. They're right there. And it's our journey in consciousness. Okay. the second page. I'm sorry, page number 3. A perspective shift is upon us. Present perspective does not negate past perspective. Remember, we talked about this yesterday. It's true that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. Absolutely. But if you're 1,000,000 miles above the earth, does it even matter?
No.
The sun doesn't rise in the east and sets in the west. It just doesn't do that. So, you know, just because it was traveling through our journey doesn't negate the fact of what we did in the past. It was true and right and good for our perspective. So, lest we repeat the mistakes of the past by judging something as good or evil, can we just say it was okay? It was, I allowed it, it's okay. It is what it is, it's good, it's perfect. I don't have to say, ooh, you know. I mean, there were times in my life where I said to Lyle, what did I spend all that time in the church for? Good Lord, I missed my kids growing up. It was more important to me to be in a church service and to be up there on stage ministering than it was to spend time with my own kids. But I get to the point where I can appreciate, because that also is something they chose. And so when I look at my kids today and I look at friends and family members, my mother is struggling with dementia and Alzheimer's, and it's just, you know, it can be overwhelming to look at her. Or I can look at her and I can move into a place of non-judgment and say, this is her path. I will not add to her sorrow by participating and giving over my energy in judging a situation that's sorrowful. It is what it is. I want to bless her, do what I can to, you know, do to serve and move on, but not get caught in the drama and the trauma of creating more of what I don't want.
Amen.
And when you give your energy to any circumstance and you try and rescue or save or hurt, or, you know, you watch the news, and I'm telling you, I had to shut off the television for many years. Couldn't watch the news because I was giving my energy to it. And so whatever this creative principle, I mean, the I am is a creative principle, it is inside of you. What the human being focuses on and gives the appropriate emotional value to, you will create more of what you are looking at. It is a law. We'll go into that a little bit more this afternoon, the creative principle of emotion and thought. But that is what the spirit seeks, because it seeks a vehicle with which to create material worlds with, and that is the ego. That's the helpmate of spirit, that's Eve. It seeks that. But it doesn't force itself, because that pattern is rape. It willingly knocks and says, will you open to me, my love, my dove, my pure one? Okay, it will be necessary to let Jesus go. It's necessary that I go away. And I don't know that we have to touch on that again. I covered that a lot last night. But suffice it to say, the history has to give way to the mystery. And a lot of what we have been taught in Christianity does not reflect the character and the nature of Jesus. It does not. When, you know, all of the time when we say, you know, when I used to cast demons out, in Jesus' name, come out! Guess what? They would. They would, because spirit is faithful. But really, what that word nature means is by my pattern, my example. You know, so be Christed. Allow that egoic side of you to enter into that place of death. So we say, I ask these things in Jesus' name, and it has a measure of effectiveness. But we have to become, the message has to be formed in the messenger. And our nature must be that nature of the Lamb that was slain from the foundation of the world. When we let go of that egoist nature of us, that is doing it in the name and nature of Jesus. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So a lot of these things, we just have to let go.
Yes.
You know, not that they weren't good. Not that they didn't serve. They did. But I don't know about you, but when I said I'm not satisfied anymore, I don't want to go back to school. I want to enter into practical application. I don't want to practice in theory anymore. And that's the admonition when it says, leaving behind the elementary doctrines, principles, let us go on to perfection. It laid a foundation in our consciousness, but it is not yet clear what we shall be. For when He appears, we shall be
like
Him. So all of these things served us, all of the patterns, all of the rituals, but now we're transitioning in our consciousness and we're going into a different place of perception and understanding who we are and why we're here. All good.
Yes. Name means nature.
Absolutely.
Whenever you have a name, it means the nature.
That's right. Okay, so to understand where we are headed, the history must give way to the mystery. Again. The law will bring us only to a certain level of execution, and there are many that perished under the law. That's what they signed up for. God bless them. They did what they came here for. Nothing wrong with that. They fulfilled their mission. Okay. Christ is growing within your consciousness and will soon overtake the garden. Remember, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. When the mustard seed that grows inside of the garden begins to eclipse the other plants in the garden, guess what that is? I experience this all the time, especially in the last year. Where I go to speak out, Barbara would like to speak and to share something, but the Christ in me says, be still, Barbara. And I say, I yield. I recognize that this is a vehicle of spiritual expression that He desires in the earth. And right now I want to practice being that helpmate and that vehicle of expression. So as Christ grows up inside this garden, then it begins to bear the fruits. It becomes mature. And so that part of me that's growing up with Him begins to take that subservient role. And, you know, Leah, today you talked about a mentor. The scripture says that, and I covered this last night, but it says that this mustard herb tree grows to be the largest in the garden, so large that the birds of heaven come and nest in its branches, its consciousness. And so, what are birds of heaven? That's right. Now, we talked a little bit last night about the 12 disciples and what they represent. And I believe when the Christ gathers His disciples around Him, it's like Ali Ali Infree. It's calling those other energies and other dimensional levels coming home to roost in the branches, in the consciousness of the One, of the I Am. And so everything that you need is available to you. That's nice to have friends that you can hammer out doctrine and new ideas with. We'll always need that. But those ones that bring information to us are right there. And you'll have these experiences the more that you practice. And it takes practice. We're practicing being human and then now being God-men as Christ is being birthed in the earth and he's growing up in the garden. We will notice this shift, subtle shift in consciousness where you don't fly off the handle like you did before. Right? Where all of a sudden your motive of operation takes a different bend and you're not moving according to your ego, your my will, my way, my right, but now you've been yielding to this other part of who you are and you're becoming one with it, the masculine and the feminine together in one body. It's beautiful. So you'll notice those things happen to you. Those divine intrusions where it's like you're being counseled by your higher self, for lack of a better term. This new consciousness is too broad and too deep for the logical mind to embrace. I once heard this story, and we're going to wrap up the morning session in just a little bit here, but I once heard this story, profound story, that where we are going in consciousness, if we do not learn to transition out of the logical part of our mind and move into the intuitive part of our mind, old wineskins, new wineskin, if we don't learn to have the lightning come from the east and flash to the west, if we try to contain all of these things in the logical mind, it will burst and the new wine spilled. That's what Jesus talked about. And I heard it like this. It's like by trying to contain all of this information that is now coming on the scene that is way too broad and expansive for our logical mind. If we try to do it with our logical mind, he said, it is like taking a donkey for a Sunday drive hitched to the back of our family station wagon going 75 miles an hour. Isn't that a good picture? It can't do it. And again, it's important for you to discover, and everyone may have a different path and a different way to stimulate the intuitive faculties. Reading The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle or A New Earth, some of the best writing that you can read about practicing stillness. It gives such good instruction to the intellect how to stimulate this part of your thinking. It's wonderful. And it's just that transition and that shift of being willing to be a helpmate rather than a master. The cross offers us the opportunity to bring the ego into the ground as master of the body, to resurrect as a servant to the spirit. So it's learning to leave behind the logical pathways of learning, which is hard for our Western minds, but once we begin to practice this, it becomes much easier. And the information that comes in is amazing. And it comes in through symbols and types and things that our logical mind goes, I don't get that. But our intuitive mind grasps it all and is not worried about getting it right. Okay. You'll make it through this transitional period. There are a whole lot of things that accompany the process of waking up. You know, I showed the people today at the table something that I posted on my Facebook page, and it shows this crumpled piece of paper that's been uncrumpled and set out, and there are three things. It says a box to check, and then it says, I am a Republican. Then it gives another box to check, and it says, I am a Democrat. And then at the very bottom it says, I am awake. And that's the box that's checked. So you are going to have opportunities in this position to continue maintaining third dimensional reality by worry and trauma and drama and fear of, you know, all of these things that are unfolding in our world. And you can continue to participate in that if that's your choice. And there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you've incarnated to do, then have at it. If you have incarnated to help awaken the masses then it is your task to bridge the gap between one age and the next, and that is to depart the normal operating procedures of this dimensional level. Depart. And it's hard not to be human. Because we've been it for how many lifetimes? It's hard. But you will remember. You will remember. And all it takes, it's like breaking a smoking habit. You know, it takes 21 days to, it takes 3 days to break the physical desire for nicotine and all of the chemicals, the addictive chemicals. But it takes 21 days to break a habit. So it's just like breaking a habit. Choosing to think on things that are pure and lovely and of a good report. It's important to take every thought captive unto the obedience of the Christ. And we'll go into this in this afternoon's session, because what you think on, we're going to go into the mechanics of creation in detail, what you focus on, because you are I am in a body, what you focus on and what you decree is. And you will continue to propagate this dimensional reality as long as you continue to participate in it. But there is a company that has been given the task to bridge the gap between this age and the next. And to do that, you step away from human logic and linear thinking, and you enter into that other side. As lightning flashes from the east to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be in his kingdom. If you cease to thread the threads of the tapestry that creates this reality, if 10%, if the tithe just ceases to judge and to maintain this tapestry, if we stop putting in those threads of judgment, guess what? It compromises the fabric's integrity, and this age will give way to the next. It will happen. Okay, one more point. Okay, again, your promised birth after your labor. In the natural, when the baby's head is in the birth canal, and the water breaks, and the baby is going through that place of transition, that's where most women lose it. When your hips begin, when your bones begin to spread, I mean, women that have had children,
holy crap.
Hurt. And we're like, give me drugs, give me anything, the doctor. And I mean, I yelled at my doctor. I mean, I did all sorts of stuff. You're just not yourself because you lose it in transition. Well, we're in that narrow place where consciousness is being birthed out of one restricted place. And thank God that the baby doesn't stay in there forever. Really, because the root breaks the pot. And the planting can no longer remain in a small, restricted area. That is the age of the church. It brought us to a beautiful place, but it's time to expand beyond. And to expand beyond, you need to exchange the old wineskin for the new. You need to look at things not logically, linearly, but intuitively and spiritually or mystically. And everything that you need is here for you, for the journey. Is it a good stopping place?
Oh, yeah.
Good?
Yes, good.
Okay. This afternoon, we're going to go into the mechanics of creation. You're going to like that. It's good.